I'm Chris Herries. I'm here to help Richard with the workshop. I'm a director of the Cooperative Group, which is the largest consumer cooperative in this country. It's the one with the shops, the bank, funerals, pharmacy, legal services, and lots of other things. Some of you may even be a member of it. I'm also the vice chair of Cooperatives UK, which is the UK-wide organisation for all types of cooperatives, consumer, worker, all of the other different types as well, of which we'll tell you more later. I've been involved in the cooperative movement since about 1983, so quite some time. When I was thinking of coming here, I thought, gosh, the last time I went to a festival was the last Isle of Wight Pop Festival in 1970. Most of you were probably not born then, but it's nice to be back at a festival. So now hand over to Richard, who will tell you who he is.
Hello. for those of you who don't know, my name's Richard Bickle. I've been coming to Greenbelt for about 9 years, and I've just celebrated 18 years in the cooperative movement in a range of different capacities. So it's a great pleasure to link those two interests and to be here as a co-operator as well as a Greenbelter. Amongst other things, I'm the secretary of the UK Society for Cooperative Studies, which tries to link the theory and practice of cooperation. We work with academics and practitioners from across the movement. I'm the co-founder of the Birmingham Film Co-op, Just Film for a Fairer World. We show films to make you think once a month in Birmingham, and at least one other member of Just Film is here, which is fantastic, there in the front. And I'm also the co-founder of a fair trade cooperative in Wolverhampton, which is quite unusually a spin-off from a private company. The private company was Revolver Records, and it's Revolver Cooperative. And I serve on the Midlands Cooperative Society's Member Relations Committee, Midlands being the largest co-op retailer across the Midland Counties. So that's who I am. Now, in contrast to quite a lot of sessions at Greenbelt, we're actually going to get used to some of the work, because as co-operators, we believe that everybody has something to contribute, and actually we achieve an awful lot more when we all pool our resources and work together to meet our common goals and aspirations. So the first thing that we'd like you to do is actually make friends with the people around you and rearrange yourselves into little groups of four. Now, you can move your chairs, they're not fixed together, but what you can't do is block the aisle, particularly at this side, because if there's a fire, we don't particularly want to get our colleagues in the funeral department to put you in a box. So if you could rearrange yourself quite quickly into little clumps of four, just so you can see the people around you, that would be fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, it looks as if most people are settled now into groups. It doesn't really matter whether they're four or five or whatever, but just so that you can chat together. And the first thing we want you to ask is to chat about. Is to introduce yourselves to each other if you don't know who you are already, and if you could tell everybody in the group about something that's made you smile today. So you've got about a couple of minutes to introduce yourselves to each other and say something that's made you smile today. If you haven't smiled yet, you can smile now and tell them. If you've all sorted out something that's made you smile today, could you tell each other why you've come to this particular workshop? Why you've come, not why you've come to Greenbelt, but if you, having worked out what's made you smile today, if you could tell each other why you've come to this particular workshop, what you would like to get out of it or what you would like to bring to it.
And we'll try afterwards to make sure that we deliver that. Okay, folks, thank you very much for that thinking and reflecting. No, sorry. I would normally say yes, but actually we are very, very tight for time. Now, in a minute, we're going to come round some of the groups and ask you to share one thing from your group of reasons that people have come to see if a pattern starts to emerge. But before we do that, we thought it might be quite fun if everybody can, at the same point, shout out the thing that's made you smile today. So if you'd like to do that now. Meditation. Thank you very much. Which group would like to start with sharing one thing that one of the reasons they've come? Don't be shy. One there.
I've come because I run a fair trade shop in the town where we live, and I buy from Suma, who are a workers' cooperative. Went to the presentation about Zeytun olive oil last night, who are also a cooperative. I'm interested in cooperatives, and I'm, you know, here to hear what you've got to tell me.
Thank you very much. Who else would like to share something? Yeah.
Hang on.
Sorry, we're trying.
It's being recorded. Sorry.
No pressure there. I'm here because I'm part of a group called Cecil Green Housing Cooperative, and we want to find out more information about setting up a cooperative, and we're also looking for people to invest their money in our project. So that's me.
Fantastic. And another one?
If you could come over here, please.
Interested in setting up microfinancing and understanding more about cooperatives and social enterprise.
Fantastic, thank you. And we've got the gentleman from the back.
Two out of our five were interested in the kind of political aspect of it, particularly where we're at now with protest movements like Occupy and the potential for those to merge into cooperative movements and what the cooperative party is about.
Fantastic, thank you very much. We've got one over here.
Sorry.
Thanks. I'm interested in setting up a carpool or car club, and I'm wondering if a cooperative would be a good way of doing it.
Thank you very much. And can we have one last one, and then we'll move to the next part of the... One more?
I mean, this one, not very good at reason, but I came because it's too muddy to go anywhere else. And but it turns out that's a subject I am interested in.
Thank you very much.
Great that we rescued you from the sea of mud as well as fulfilling other hopes. Okay, thanks very much for that. I wonder how many people here are members of a cooperative? Perhaps you could put your hands up. You could tell I used to be a primary school teacher. Hands up who's a member of a cooperative. Okay, can you keep your hand up if you're a member of a cooperative other than the big consumer cooperatives? Like a housing co-op or a worker co-op? Yeah. Thanks very much. Anyone who is from one of the other cooperatives who'd like to tell us about their cooperative? Don't be shy. You will have to wait for the microphone. If you're in a housing co-op or a worker co-op or a... Aha! The film co-op.
As well as Birmingham Just Film Co-op, which once a month shows films on various social justice themes and documentaries to feature films, I'm also involved in a food co-op in South Birmingham, which sources food in bulk from Suma, I believe, and people can group together to order different items and share out the produce when it's ordered. It's often a lot cheaper buying it in bulk and direct from wholesale than buying it from stores.
Sorry, hang on, just before we move on, can you tell us why you joined and what you think the benefits of being part of that co-op are?
Well, I think it's good to think about how we source our food and where food comes from. It makes me feel more connected with the food that I eat, and it gives me a better understanding of the process of production and consumption that I'm part of, and hopefully will encourage me to think more about where I source my food and make me think about perhaps growing my own food as well and thinking more sustainably about that.
Anyone else from another co-op?
It's not quite called a co-op, but there's a Bristol Energy thing where you put some money in and they put solar panels onto buildings. And you can have a small interest, but the main thing is it's green and it's something we should do for the future.
Yeah, a bit like an energy saving co-op.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think...
Yeah, I'm part of a small group that set up a fair trade shop as a co-op about 8 years ago. And we run it as a co-op, but I suppose I'm partly here to find out, just to re-inspire myself with the principles of the cooperative movement and to find out whether we could be doing more as a co-op other than just running ourselves as a fair trade shop.
And what made you decide to be a cooperative in the first place and to get together like that?
It sort of mirrored the principles of the groups that we were obtaining our goods from, often cooperatives in the developing world, and it just seems a good model to encourage the involvement of as many people as possible.
And do you find that it fulfills what you wanted it to do, or are there any challenges maybe that?
I think working cooperatively is always a challenge. I think yes. But yeah, I think we're just to explore whether we could be doing more in cooperative terms would be interesting. Yeah.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. A friend over here with.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm with the guy who's been said he's in the Cecil Green Housing Cooperative, but so yeah, we're just in the process of setting up, really. So we haven't. We don't own a property, that's what we're trying to sort out at the moment. But it's part of trying to get a place where we can live, where we have control of our own housing without having to be part of the system where you have to save massive amounts of money and pour it into a bank or a private landlord and kind of take control more and, escape from things a bit more.
Mm, thanks. So what made you get the idea to start with to join together as a housing co-op?
I can't remember. We've been talking about it for years in various different groups. But I think it's particularly the thing where as if we're looking at a housing cooperative that's fully mutual, so everybody in the cooperative has one direct vote and one influence over their own property where they live and then again, you don't have any kind of investment in the property as a whole, so you don't have to. So, I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone here, certainly.
Oh, that's fine.
But it's the property is it will always belong to the people who live in it. So the property always belongs to the people who use it, not to. So no one can ever use that property to make money out of it. So. Yeah, because I very firmly believe that you should make money from the work that you do and not from the assets that you own. And the cooperative is deliberately set up to do that. Yeah. Whereas if you're not set up to do that, then you're effectively transferring wealth to the rich the whole time.
Great. But, yeah. Thanks. Someone right at the back.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't know what the word is for it, but it might be like a pop-up co-op, just like a temporary one. I've been hairdressing at Greenbelt for quite a few years, and rather than everyone coming to me as a professional hairdresser, I find people to cooperate with each other to do each other's hair under supervision and raise money for a good cause, but then people go away then afterwards. And they might do the same thing where they come from, but I don't know whether that counts as a co-op or just cooperation.
I think we can call it both, yeah.
And that's a really interesting example about people sharing skills with other folk. if we broaden the conversation out a bit again, those of The people who put their hand up at the very beginning and said that they were members of one of the large consumer cooperative societies running things like shops and funeral parlours and travel agents. Would anybody like to tell us what being part of, being a member of a consumer co-op means to them as an individual member?
Thank you. I'm a member of the, I don't know what the technical name for it is, the cooperative supermarket, which...
The co-op group.
The co-op group, yeah. Which means when I go to the shop, I can show my membership card and so on. To me, that's important because I'm part of the organisation. I'm not just a customer. I see that while being far from perfect, there are more ethical values in the co-op in terms of fair trade goods and you know those sort of things that are on sale than in most supermarkets. And I think that's a result of consumer cooperation. At the same time, I'm aware that with the growth of things like reward cards, Tesco club cards, Nectar points and so on, that to many people the membership card may just appear something like that. So it's important to me, but actually I sort of feel like I want to take it a step further and for that for the nature of it to be more manifest.
Well, yeah. Of course, one of the fundamental differences between being a co-op member and showing your membership card or having a Tesco club card is that in the case of the co-op, you actually own the business. You're actually a joint owner with all the other people who are members. And you get a chance to vote for people like Chris when it comes to election time. And I just wondered, have you ever voted in an election for your representatives?
I think I have, but I honestly can't remember.
Okay, that's interesting. How many people think that they have voted in a cooperative society election at some point? Well done.
The elections do come round every year, so and they should be advertised in the stores. So you should get a chance every year to vote for your representatives from your consumer society. So keep a lookout for it if you want to be involved democratically.
And if you're interested in having a greater say in running the business, talk to us afterwards, because the people who are elected onto those committees and boards are just ordinary shoppers like us. You know, it's not. You don't have to be an accountant or a lawyer or some amazing person. It works because we all have to buy food, and actually, we all know something about buying food, or indeed getting berries or growing food on the farms or doing all the other things that consumer societies do for their members.
Yeah, our board is just ordinary members like Richard and myself. And so any of you, as well as voting, if you're a member, you can also stand to be on your local committee.
Yeah, I just would love to know how to structure a cooperative. If you want to share how you started, you've been in the business a long time, you know, how the cooperative was set up and what possible structures there are. Is it the same as social enterprise? There's not a lot of information out there about cooperatives or social enterprise. I know there are organizations you can go to, but I think it would be really helpful to understand a bit more about structuring and setting up. Thanks.
I don't know if anybody else is here from a smaller cooperative. If I tell you that the cooperative group is generally reckoned to have started in 1844, that's quite a way back. The structure that was set up then is one that's carried forward to today, although it's grown much, much larger over the years by lots of small cooperatives mainly joining together. We have got some leaflets that will tell you how you could set up a cooperative. And there are also out and about around the country organisations called cooperative development bodies. And we can put you in touch with the nearest cooperative development body to you who could actually give you information about how you could start a cooperative. And if there's a group of people who would like to start a cooperative, you can apply to the Enterprise Hub for funding to get free advice to help you to set up that cooperative. All of that information is available, and we can let you have that rather than me trying to tell you on the back of an envelope at the moment how to set up a cooperative. So we've got lots of information. It's something which there are a lot of people out there who will help you to set up a cooperative business, and it really does depend what sort of business that you want to set up.
I mean, at the moment, co-ops are being registered in the UK at the rate of just over one a day. But if you listen to the stories of co-operators who are setting up those enterprises of all shapes and sizes, and if you look at the history of the movement, you can spot some common themes. And of course, the first thing is finding other like-minded people. Now, obviously, once you've got going, you can hopefully build up a momentum. But I would have thought the first stage with any project has got to be to find perhaps three or four other people who share your vision and think it's worth having a go. I mean, if you look at the people who set up the first really, really successful consumer co-op in Rochdale in 1844, they were unemployed handloom weavers. They were people who knew each other from their trade guild. They were involved in friendly societies before. They'd been Chartists. And they were in one admittedly rapidly growing but relatively small mill town in Lancashire. So the basic principle that you find people who have common needs and aspirations, and you try to work together to find a way that through a jointly owned business you can meet those needs of everybody. That is the system. And as Chris says, the Enterprise Hub does provide free advice nationwide. The tab is picked up by the cooperative group. It's part of what the group does for the movement more generally. And it's the first time ever that in the last 5 years, the first time ever that kind of advice and support has been available up and down the country, irrespective of where you live. Okay. Well, we're going to move into the next part of the workshop, which is going to be if you can get back into your little groups. We've started having this conversation already. We heard about the people thinking about a car share scheme in Oxford. And interestingly, there's already a cooperative car pool in just down the road in Swindon that I think you could probably, quite usefully talk to. But I just wonder if you could get back into your groups and see if you can identify some need or some opportunity in the communities you're part of that could be communities of place, local geography, or it could be communities of interest that you think there might be a cooperative solution to. And just remember, we've already heard about energy co-ops, renewable energy, we've heard about car shares, we've heard about housing co-ops. So can you think of a specific example from your experience of life where you think there is an opportunity to work cooperatively together?
Okay, I hope you've had enough time to think of some ideas as to enterprises that you could be setting up as cooperatives that would fulfil a need either of your community, your physical community, or your interest community. Any group like to start us off? Thanks.
We talked here, Claire was talking about a chicken cooperative and various people buying chickens and looking after them in rotation and sharing the eggs, but also sharing them with the wider community. And I've been also thinking about a community biogas project, which would be hopefully different people having their animals and putting the manure into the biogas plant and then using the gas off it.
Could we just stay with you for a minute? And could you say what would be the thing that you would most need to get either of those two cooperatives off the ground?
Well, the chicken one's already running.
Right.
So I don't know, do you want to say...
And they could actually help start your biogas project then.
Yeah, unfortunately quite a long distance away from us. But
well, they can fly.
I suppose for the biogas thing, it's it would be, yeah, space and expertise, actually, both at this point.
Okay, thanks very much. I think there's a hand up.
So apart from just really liking the fact that the website of that would presumably be chicken.coop, which is brilliant.
Oh, nice one.
We've been talking, or I've been doing some work exploring data cooperatives, so something intangible, like personal data and public data. How can we find cooperative ways of managing that? Because we're told we live in a data deluge. We've got much more data from, for example, our loyalty cards on what we're shopping for, lots of public data, but we've got very few ways of managing that without handing it over to big faceless corporations who number crunch it and extract the value from it. So can we use co-op structures to have some more value in Co-ops UK, and others have been doing some work to support that exploration.
Yeah, and any thing that you would particularly need to help get that kickstarted?
So I think one of the things is finding the concrete situations to pilot that work to explore what it looks like in practice, and that's probably the challenge, because it's a very big thing in general, and it's finding specific cases to work on.
Thanks. Right over at the back there, I think.
People might have have to come forward.
I think we're going to form a fitness co-op out the front of
The idea we had, and we don't know how it would actually happen, is that we were wondering about whether you could have cooperative old people's homes, because obviously the families of elderly people really want to influence the way in which their loved one is cared for. And so being a member of the home might enable you to do that. And then also something like the guy was saying about a housing cooperative, so the people who are living there at the time somehow own the property. And so rather than the property being owned by private equity who has taken all the money out of it, it's owned by the people who live in it. And then maybe care wouldn't have to cost old people so much money.
Yeah, that's really interesting. They have in Scandinavia... quite a few multi-stakeholder cooperatives of elderly people and their families and the people who care for them, so that the members of the co-op are either the employees of the co-op or the people who are in the old people's home, or they're the family and friends of them living around. And they all have a say in how that particular co-op is run. And that's one of the things that several areas of the UK people are working on at the moment. So, and it's certainly a terrific need that quite a lot of us have already or will be in a few years' time.
How could we find out about that, about what's going on already?
Sorry?
How could we find out about that work that's already going on?
Talk to us afterwards. You can probably Google it, but I think for that care stuff, there's quite a lot of successful models of care co-ops providing domiciliary care. In other words, carers coming into service users' homes. There are some examples of direct payment co-ops where people in receipt of direct payments pool their pot and employ carers and PAs collectively. In terms of the care homes, it's more difficult because it's a major capital asset. But the Welsh Government have a policy of looking at that as the preferred future for care homes in Wales. And I did some work with them a couple of years ago trying to scope out how that would actually work, which I can tell you about after the session. So, I mean, my card is on by the door and you can email me if you want to know more.
Somebody in our group talked about cooperative university because of student fees, but I've also been interested for some time in how people could get together to provide education, because it's getting very much marketized and commercialized, and I think education is something that should be available to everyone, and so I'd really be interested in... We haven't had a chance in our group to pursue it any further, but to kind of get the idea of how people could work together to provide education.
I'll hand over to Richard in a moment to talk about cooperative universities, because that's a topic for a conference that he's organising next weekend. One of the recent developments in general education... is the lots of schools are becoming educational cooperatives, the current government is trying to encourage schools to opt out of the local education authority, and a lot of schools don't want to do that. And so to sort of circumvent this, they are becoming education cooperatives, and the students, the parents, the local community, and the members of staff, all the members of staff, not just the teaching staff, become members of the cooperative and run the school, but they are still part of the local education authority and still buy in the services of the local education authority. So they still stay within the family of the county that they are in. And that's one of the fastest parts of the cooperative movement in growing at the moment. Down in the southwest, the further southwest where I come from, there are a lot of schools have been set up as cooperatives in Cornwall. I live in Tiverton, and the high school and all of its feeder schools are setting up as a cooperative trust in the new academic year. So if you back in your communities want to get involved with your local education, then suggest to the local schools that they look into being a cooperative trust school. It means that they keep control of their school and it's not handed back to Westminster. And also it's a way of involving the students, the parents and the local community in how their school is run. But Richard will tell you about cooperative universities.
Yeah, there are two really quite exciting developments going on. One thing, we had at the very beginning, we had the guys at the back talking about the Occupy movement and talking about, you know, co-op involvement. Now, I think personally one of the most exciting things that's come out of recent political movements, including Occupy, has been this emerging free university movement and free university network. I'm part of the Free University of Birmingham, and I'm quite chuffed that our meetings happen in cooperative premises, because right at the very beginning of the co-op movement, providing education for members was one of the very first things that societies did, hence meeting rooms above shops, evening classes, and all of that kind of thing, which we're still doing, actually, in the West Midlands. The other thing, I mean, that's, you know, I think the free university movement is really quite interesting, quite exciting, and it's about people sharing and learning together on a completely free of charge basis, and on the whole, rejecting the idea of accreditation and marketisation. Over in Lincoln, there's something called the Lincoln Social Science Centre, which is actually trying to create a cooperative institution to deliver. Further in higher education, and they will be accrediting courses. Wearing my co-op studies hat, we're also commissioning a pamphlet on whether you can actually restructure the existing mainstream universities on a cooperative basis. Because, I mean, anyone who knows anything about the current trend in higher education is that universities and colleges are being forced to think and behave as if they were private corporations, which we think is absolutely at odds with what education ought to be about. So there's some exciting stuff going on, and I think it's a case of watch this space on that point.
Okay. Any other suggestions for...
This is something that's just occurred to me, really, at Greenbelt as a wheelchair user, that wheelchair users potentially have different needs for different activities and things. So the wheelchair I'm currently using has massive wheels, which are great for festivals, but I would not want to be using this all the time at all. And then you have different wheels for sports, dancing, the beach. So a co-op owning sort of specialist wheelchairs that cost thousands and thousands of pounds and people can't buy, sort of to hire them out to wheelchair users individually as and when they need them, would be great.
Yeah, and presumably the membership of that would be the wheelchair users themselves, so that they would know exactly what wheelchairs they needed to do and the spec for buying them in. What, apart from anything other than a large input of capital, that you would need to get that off the ground?
I'm not sure. I suppose enough wheelchair users to be interested, but...
A system to network with other wheelchair users,
yes.
Really.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Sounds like a great idea.
Hello, one more from the back. But before I do the idea, I just want to intellectually tickle just for a moment, because I'm slightly concerned that in a couple of comments, I'm struggling with the right words, but it's about middle-class faddism, and also the more ideological point that whether it's a social care cooperative, possibly being brought about under duress, because the local authority would otherwise make those staff redundant and the care homes would go to the private sector. Therefore, the workers struggle makes me believe that those cooperatives are the ones that are more likely to fail because they have not a common bond, but it's purely pragmatism, the alternative being unemployment or a tupi arrangement that will end up down the line in a lousy way, an even more lousy wage rate. The middle class faddism point is car sharing and all those things that happen in South Birmingham, North London and South Manchester tend to be around capable middle class communities, and yet the early cooperative movement absolutely came out, as you described with the Rochdale Pioneers, of a different set of arrangements. So I'll just leave that there for a moment. But the idea from the back, one chap talked about the village pub. So another member said Heskett Newmarket in North Cumbria is one of the market leaders. It's a great model. And it's now got another related co-op that is the local brewery. So there's two co-ops in the village. And in the Eden Valley on the east of Penrith, there's also movements around village cooperation around village stores and around the local pub. And we hadn't talked about those, so I just thought I'd mention those.
Yeah, thanks for that. Just going back to the start of the co-op and the Rochdale Pioneers, the group of people who did set it up. Actually, although they were workers, they were not the working class. They were very much middle class of their day, and they had a proud history of fairly high wages. It was because they were now their wage, or one of the reasons was that their wages were now being reduced because of the build up of factories and mechanisation the cooperative was set up. But it was actually a middle class movement in its day. So, like most revolutions, it did start from the middle class. Although they were artisans, they were people who had more money than the actual factory workers and the mill workers of the day. They came into the cooperative later. But it's a fairly complicated history of the movement. But
William Cobbett, who was a great 19th century political radical, he used to say, "I defy you to agitate a man on an empty stomach." Mm. Now, the point being that if you're absolutely on your uppers, if you're unemployed, if you don't know where the next meal is coming from, you simply don't have the time and resources to get involved in a speculative cooperative venture that may or may not provide bread tomorrow, so to speak. So I think the reason that co-ops tend to thrive in times of economic recession is partly because people with resources and resources themselves are thrown onto the scrap heap by the capitalist system. So you have people with, people who have education and skills whose education and skills are no longer valued. You have property and equipment that's available relatively cheaply compared with what it would be in an economic boom. And actually, to have a successful cooperative, you do need to have some access to resources. Now, of course, you can pool your little bit of resource with other people's little bit of resource. And the person at the front who talks about microfinance, what is really powerful about a cooperative model is it's a form of aggregation. So in the 19th century, the consumer co-ops became so dominant because they were a way to aggregate the very small savings of ordinary people, a very large number of ordinary people, into a massive collective pot, much greater than the individual wealth of wealthy individuals. So it's that kind of aggregation which is what is the kind of economic force that makes cooperation work. I entirely agree with what the gentleman said about the agendas around privatisation and externalisation. There are examples of workers who see their jobs about to disappear, who take the positive decision to form a co-op. And if there is a viable business to be run, that's fantastic. But if you look at the rhetoric, and it comes back to the point at the very beginning about politics, if you look at the rhetoric that's come out of the coalition government, at the very beginning, they were talking in very enthusiastic terms about co-ops and mutuals being part of the so-called big society, because they thought it was a way to get public services on the cheap. And actually, I think barely a single successful co-op has been set up out of that initiative, because when you actually look at it, if what's happening is cutbacks, it doesn't matter who is providing the service. If the money isn't there, it can't be provided. And people, absolutely rightly, aren't prepared to exploit themselves.
And is there one...
Five minutes.
Less than 5 minutes, please. Yeah.
Well, I've got a question related to what we've just been talking about, the possibility of a group obtaining the capital assets in order to set up a cooperative in the first place. I can appreciate that if you have a community that exists and then the community pools their resources that they are able to purchase capital assets and set up a cooperative. But I'm particularly interested in how this can be extended, because if cooperatives are going to offer a way of bringing the kind of great results that presumably most of us in this room think are possible and perhaps even help to transform capitalism favourably, it seems to me that it's the obtaining of the capital assets to begin with that is the key issue. So my question is, I was involved in a group that tried to purchase a current commercial enterprise, and we fell a little bit short of being able to obtain the amount that we needed to actually purchase the business, and so we kind of dropped out. But the issue that I particularly would like some advice on, that I'm just unclear on legally, is that we received some advice from someone that as we were trying to seek to get extra members to join the cooperative, that there was some legal restriction on the way in which you can advertise for people to join the community. Because it seems to me that if a successful cooperation is going to be established, you need to be able to get new members in order to have a larger pool of resources. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Right. Three very quick things. One is that there are examples. For example, the worker occupations in Argentina, where workers have seized control of factories that the owners closed down that can work. The second thing is that in terms of the legal thing about advertising, you do have to be a little bit careful about advertising investment opportunities, because the most common way co-ops are registered is as an industrial and provident society. Now, industrial and provident societies are not subject to the usual regulation in terms of issuing share prospectuses that a private company or a PLC would be. But what you mustn't do is advertise a co-op investment as if you were a bank or building society, because if you do that, you will be regulated as if you're a bank or building society. So there is, some people do get a little bit touchy about that. The third thing is, I believe it's in Northern Italy, if a business ceases trading, the workers have a right of first refusal to buy the assets at the kind of knockdown price from the receiver or the administrator. And certainly the Cooperative Party and other parts of the movement in the UK have been campaigning for that to come into UK law for very many years. And I could bore you with the kind of spurious reasons why it hasn't so far. And unfortunately, EU regulation, state aid regulation, may actually be threatening the position in Italy and Spain. But I don't see any reason why at some point in the future that couldn't be changed.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do have to wind up now. Thank you all for taking part so cooperatively in this. If you want any further information that we've alluded to, do come and see Richard and myself at the front afterwards. There are stickers and leaflets and all sorts of things available on the table on the way out. And we hope that it's fulfilled some at least of the reasons that you came to this workshop.
And so if you want to know more, at the very end of October, there is the whole of the International Year of Co-ops in the whole world is being wrapped up in a week-long festival and expo in Manchester. There will be something like 10,000 people at a public exhibition. We've got some leaflets about that, or otherwise it's manchester2012.coop. I've got a handout which has got all the details of co-op development bodies, all the national co-op bodies, and hopefully all the information you need, and also the values and principles upon which the international cooperative movement is founded. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Richard and Chris. As you are getting up, could I ask you a big, big favour to return the chairs that you've moved back to their original place, so those nice, neat rows? That would be very helpful if you could help me with that, please. Thank you.